This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, professor of television studies at Rowan University in New Jersey, in for Terry Gross. Tom Waits is one of the true eccentrics of pop music. The New York Times once described him as the poet of outcasts. There's always been an element of mystery surrounding his life. The people he usually sings about are loners, losers, hobos, outlaws, and drunks. The darkness of his lyrics is accentuated by the rumble and rasp of his voice, a voice that sounded old even when he was young. Waits has been recording since 1973. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2011. His songs have been used on the soundtracks of several films, and he's acted in the movies Down by Law, Shortcuts, Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and The Old Man and the Gun. We're going to listen back to two of our interviews with Tom Waits. When Terry spoke with him in 2002, he'd just released two lyrical concept albums, Blood Money and Alice, which are now considered some of his finest work. This month, on the 20th anniversary of their release, those albums are being reissued on vinyl with new, formerly unreleased live versions of some songs. Waits wrote those songs with his wife, Kathleen Brennan. Let's start with a song from Blood Money. This is Misery is the River of the World.
All that the monkey can climb, no more he shows his tail. Call no man happy till he dies, there's no milk at the bottom of the pail. God builds a church, the devil builds a chapel, like the thistles that are growing round the trunk of a tree. All the good in the world you can put inside a thimble, and still have room for you and me. If there's one thing you can say about mankind, there's nothing kind about man. You can drive out nature with a pitchfork, but it always comes roaring back again. Misery's the river of the world. Misery is the river of the world. Misery is the river of the world.
Tom Waits, welcome to Fresh Air.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Now, this music started as a music theater piece?
Oh, yeah. Originally, this was a project done with Robert Wilson, the avant-garde theater director. So it's the third thing that we've done with him. And the production was called Wozzeck, and this is these are the songs from that.
Some of your music writing seems influenced by the German songs of Kurt Weill. Have you listened a lot to him? Do you feel like he's influenced your writing?
Well, you know, I hadn't really listened to him until I had people tell me that I sounded somewhat like him or had some influence in there. So I said, well, I better start listening to this stuff. And
what'd you think?
And I liked it. A lot of it's really angry. And I guess I like beautiful melodies telling me terrible things.
That's and, well put, yeah.
So it works for me, you know.
The arrangements for your songs are really good. Do you do the arrangements yourself?
Well, I collaborate with my wife on the songs and every aspect of it, really, from composing and arranging and recording, all that business. So, we have a rhythm and a way of working it. It's kind of like borrowing the same $10 from somebody over and over again. But, you know, when you live together, you know, it makes it a lot easier, the payback, you know.
What came first to you, for you, being married or being song collaborators?
I don't know. It seemed like, you know, we started working together right after we got married, I think. And my wife had $50 on her, and I had $20. We got married, and it was a $70 wedding, so she thought this is not a good way to start. But we got married about 1 o'clock in the morning out in Watts, and it was kind of a whirlwind thing. And the preacher was on a beeper, and it worked out.
What was the music that you grew up listening to because your parents were listening to it? I mean, before you were old enough to choose music yourself, what was the music in your house?
Really young mariachi music, I guess. My dad only played a Mexican radio station, and then Frank Sinatra, and later Harry Belafonte, and then I would go over to my friends' houses, and I would go into the den with their dads and find out what they were listening to. That's what I was really. I couldn't wait to be an old man. I was about 13, I didn't really identify with the music of my own generation, but I was very curious about the music of others. And I think I responded to the song forms themselves, cakewalks and waltzes and barcarolles and parlor songs and all that stuff. Which are just really nothing more than jello molds for music. But I seem to like the old stuff, Cole Porter and Oscars and Hammerstein and Gershwin and all that stuff. I like the melody.
Now, you said your father listened mostly to the Mexican station and to mariachi music.
Yeah.
Was your father Mexican?
No, my dad's from Texas. He grew up in a place called Sulphur Springs, Texas. And my mom's from Oregon. She listened to church music, all that Brother Springer, she used to send money into all the preachers, But the early songs I remember was Abilene. When I heard Abilene on the radio, it really moved me. And then I heard, Abilene, prettiest town I've ever seen. Women there don't treat you mean. And Abilene, I just thought that was the greatest lyric. Women there don't treat you mean. And then Detroit City. Last night I went to sleep in Detroit City. And I dreamed about the cotton fields back home. I liked songs with the names of towns in them, and I think I liked songs with weather in them. and something to eat. So I feel like there's a certain anatomical aspect to a song that I respond to. I think, oh, yeah, I can go into that world. There's something to eat. There's the name of a street. there's a saloon. Okay. So I think probably that's why I put things like that in my songs.
I want to play another track from Blood Money, and this is called A Good Man Is Hard to Find. This is Tom Waits.
I always play Russian roulette in my head. 17 black, 429 red. How far from the gutter, how far from the pew. I will always remember to forget about you. Good man is hard to find. Homeless strangers keeping my fear in my feet. Words are goodbye.
That's A Good Man Is Hard to Find from the new Tom Waits CD, Blood Money. He also has another new CD called Alice, and we'll hear some of that a little bit later. Now, I want to ask you about your voice. You have a very raspy singing voice. Was that a sound that you strove for, that you worked on having, or is it what naturally developed?
It's that old man thing. I couldn't wait to be an old man. Old man with a deep voice. No, I scream into a pillow.
was say Louis Armstrong an influence on you?
Oh yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, you can't ignore the influence of someone like Louis Armstrong. It's but this Good Man's Hard to Find was, yeah, it was an attempt to kind of tip my hat somewhat to that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you actually sing in different kinds of voices on your new CDs. I mean, you have like your very deep, growly voice and then a lighter voice that you use.
Yeah, well, it's just like it's just a musical vocabulary, really. You know, you find the appropriate sound for the correct tune and match them up. Yeah, you know, I like to scream and, I can croon, all that stuff.
Have you ever worried about hurting your voice by...
Oh, I've heard it. Yeah, I have heard it. But I have a voice doctor in New York who used to treat Frank Sinatra and various people. He said, oh, you're doing fine. Don't worry about it.
That's good. Now, you once said that you wish you could have been a part of the Brill Building era in which people like Carole King and Lee Bernstoler and Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Barry were writing songs for singers and for vocal groups. What do you think you would have liked about that?
Oh, I guess writing at gunpoint sounds really exciting to me. Those kinds of deadlines. I went to a rehearsal building on Times Square in New York one afternoon, and a really tiny little room. In fact, it was probably smaller than the room I'm in right now, which is a little larger than a phone booth. There's just enough room for a little spinet piano, and then you could just barely close the door, and there you were. And it was, and you could hear every kind of music coming to you through the walls and through the windows and underneath the door. And you heard African bands, and you heard comedians, and you'd hear applause every now and then, and you'd hear tap dancers, and I think I just liked the whole melange of it, the way it all kind of mixes together. Mm-hmm. I like turning on two radios at the same time and listening to them. I like hearing things incorrectly. I think that's how I get a lot of ideas, is by mishearing something.
Tom Waits, you have two new CDs. We heard part of Blood Money. You have another new CD called Alice, which I believe, like Blood Money, also has its origins as a Robert Wilson music theater piece.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was done in Hamburg quite a while ago, in 93, something like that.
And what is Alice about?
It's a hypothetical situation. Kind of imagining the obsession that Lewis Carroll had for this young girl, Alice, and, what it might have been like inside of his mind in Victorian England and all that stuff. The beginning of photography, and he's, a young gal, and, it's kind of like a, fever dream or whatever, kind of a virus of the mind.
Well, why don't we hear the title track? This is called Alice, and if there's something you want to say to introduce it, that's great, and if not, we'll just hear it.
Yeah, this is Alice. This is kind of like the opening tune, and it's like a private moment. It's like sitting in a chair by yourself, thinking about someone.
Okay, here's Alice, the title track from the new Tom Waits CD.
It's dreamy weather we're on. You waved your crooked wand along an icy pond with a frozen moon. A murder of silhouette. Crows I saw, and the tears on my face, and the skates on the pond, they spell Alice. I disappear in your name, but you must wait for me somewhere across the sea. There's the wreck of a ship. Your hair is like meadow grass on the tide, and the raindrops on my window and the ice in my drink. Baby, all I can think of is Alice.
That's the title track of Tom Waits' new CD, Alice, one of two new CDs that he has. Did you, even as a kid, like, you know, murder ballads and stories of depravity like like you do now?
Oh, yeah, everybody loves that.
What are some of the things that scared you as a kid, either that scared you in real life or movies or music that you found frightening? Interesting, but frightening.
Oh, I don't know. I guess, like, the plastic covers on sofas always scares me. The sound that makes when you sit down on a sofa that's covered with plastic crinkles. And I don't know. I used to watch Alfred Hitchcock and The Twilight Zone. Those captivated me. Those little tales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Monster movies.
And monster movies, yeah, sure. But you know, things that really scared me, I don't know. I guess, you know, I could conjure up just about anything and scare myself, you know. If I heard a sound at night, you know, and then it would get larger and larger and stranger and stranger, and then I would get, you know, afraid to get out of bed. And I think I had some kind of a disorder, you know, the way I heard things. If I moved my hand across in the air, I heard like, whoo, you know.
Wow, really?
And cars going by sounded like planes. And yeah, very small sounds in the house got enormous. But I think it was just a temporary condition.
Did you ever see a doctor about it?
They said they couldn't help me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, you dropped out of high school. Why did you drop out? Is there something that you want to do instead, or did you just hate going?
Oh, I wanted to go into the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, enough of this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the ceiling in the rooms. I didn't like the holes in the ceiling, the little tiny holes in the cork board and the long stick used for opening the windows.
Oh, God. Yeah, we had one of those in my elementary school.
I just hated all that stuff. I was real sensitive to my visual surroundings, and I just wanted to get out of there.
Did any adults try to stop you, either your parents or teachers?
I had good teachers. I had some. My folks broke up when I was about 11, and so I had teachers that I liked a lot. I kind of looked up to, and but then they seemed like they couldn't wait to get out into the world themselves and do some, you know, banging around and learning and growing. And so I thought maybe they were encouraging me to leave.
So did you succeed in kind of getting out into the world, so to speak?
Pretty much, yeah. And,
what'd you do?
Oh, yeah, I hitchhiked all over the place. And yeah, I don't know.
What's the craziest ride that you got when you were hitchhiking that you would shudder to think about now?
Well, actually, I had some good things that happened to me hitchhiking, because I did wind up on New Year's Eve in front of a Pentecostal church, and an old woman named Mrs. Anderson came out to the... was stuck in a town with, like, seven people in this town, and trying to get out, you know, and my buddy and I were out there for hours and hours and hours, getting colder and colder. And it was getting darker and darker. And finally she came over. She says, come on into the church here. It's warm and there's music and you can sit in the back row. And we did. And they were singing and, you know, they had a tambourine, electric guitar, and a drummer. And they were, you know, talking in tongues. And then they kept gesturing to me and my friend, Sam. I said, these are our wayfaring strangers here. And so we felt kind of important. And they took up a collection. They gave us some money, bought us a hotel room and a meal. And we got out the next morning, and we hit the first ride, 7 in the morning, and we were gone. It was really nice. I still remember all that, and it was gave me a good feeling about traveling.
Uh-huh. Tom Waits, thank you so much. It's really been great to talk with you. Thank you.
Oh, we're all done.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice to talk to you, Terry.
Tom Waits recorded in 2002. 20th anniversary vinyl versions of his albums Blood Money and Alice have just been released. Now, we're going to listen to their interview from 2011. That year, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and had released his album Bad as Me. It features guitarists Mark Rebo, David Hidalgo, and Keith Richards, who also sings on one track.
Now, the last time you were on Fresh Air, which was back in 2002, you said that one of the reasons you wanted a kind of raspy voice when you sang is that when you were a young man, you couldn't wait to be an old man.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned like Louis Armstrong and how when you were, I guess, a teenager, you walked with a cane for a while to affect a certain look. And I'm wondering, that desire to, like, be an old man, how's that feeling now? Now that, like, you're in your early 60s.
Now that I'm an old man.
Well, you're not an old man, but you're closer than you were when you were in your teens, that's for sure.
Well, I don't know. I guess I've always lived upside down. I want things I can't have. My wife actually thinks that I have a syndrome. It's called reality distortion field. You know, it's kind of like drugs, only you can't come back from it, you know. Reality distortion is almost a permanent condition. So I guess to a certain degree, I did that with myself. When I was a kid, I did want to be an old timer. I thought they were the ones with the big stories and the cool clothes, you know, and the great hats and the, you know, I wanted to go there.
You have a couple of songs about death on the new album, and
about death. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and you know, like one is explicitly about death, and one of them is kind of a metaphor for death, called Last Leaf.
Yeah.
And
well, I don't know. You could say it's a metaphor for death, or you could say it's really a song about the last leaf on a tree. You know, because I did see a tree out in my yard that had one leaf left on it.
Oh, really?
And I looked at that leaf and I said, "Hang on, buddy. If you hang on, you can make it to the next season. If you can make it to the next one, you might be here next year, greeting all the new ones. Hang on." But I remember saying that to myself, like I was talking to a cat, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, my wife said, "Get Keith to sing on that."
Yeah, this is Keith Richards, who's featured on guitar on several tracks and on vocals, vocal backup on this.
Oh yeah, and we didn't even send it to him. We sent him another one called "I'm Waiting for My Good Luck to Come," and when we got together, he said, "You know, put that one on. Put on the Good Luck to Come." And I said, "No, well, listen to this one." And we put on "Last Leaf," and he dug it. He even brought a guitar that I had given him a few years back, that he thought maybe I'd want to hear him play that guitar, you know. And, it was great working with him as a, like they say, with recording, it's either really easy or it's impossible, and with him, it's easy.
So let's hear "Last Leaf." This is from Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me. And it features Keith Richards on guitar and backup vocals.
When the autumn wind blows, they're already gone. And flutter to the ground as they can't hang on. And there's nothing in the world that I ain't seen. I greet all the new ones that are coming in. I'm the last leaf on the tree. And the autumn took the rest, but they won't take me. I'm the last leaf on the tree. They say I've got staying power here on the tree. been here since Eisenhower, and I outlived even he. I'm the last leaf on the tree. The autumn took the rest, but they won't take me.
That's Tom Waits with Keith Richards singing backup from Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me. How do you and Keith Richards even know each other?
Back in 84, 85, I don't know, New York, we were doing Rain Dogs. And my wife said, get Keith to play on this. So, oh God, no, I can't. I'm not worthy. She said, no, we get him. And it, one thing led to the other. And so, you know, he was called, and then I was mortified and embarrassed, and they sent him the record, and he liked it, and he came down with a semi-truck full of instruments and a musical butler, and, you know, it was really hilarious, and we played till very late, you know, and he played on like four or five songs. And so I've stayed in touch and know him since then. And nobody in the world like him. We wrote songs together for a while, and that was fun. I had never really written with anybody except my wife, so it was unique and a little scary at first, because he doesn't really remember anything or write anything down. So you play for an hour, and then he would yell across the room, "Scribe!" And I looked around, scribe, who's the scribe? And then he'd say it again, and now pointing at me, scribe. And I was supposed to have written down everything we said and dreamt of and played. And I realized that we needed an adult in the room. And I've never been the one that one would consider the adult. So it was an interesting dynamic, and I learned to be a scribe.
So there's another great ballad on your album called New Year's Eve. The song uses a line that you actually said in our previous interview. What you said in the previous interview was that sometimes you used to listen to two radios at the same time because you like hearing things incorrectly, and you got a lot of ideas by mishearing something. And in the song, you use the line, "All the noise was disturbing, and I couldn't find Irving. It was like two stations at the same time."
Yeah.
And I guess, is that an image you've been carrying around for many years, and it finally made its way into a song?
That happens. And so, yeah, I'm sure I've been carrying it around. The other line in there that I wanted to get into a song was, you know, you ever said to somebody, just keep talking, but don't use any names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like two spies talking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're talking about drugs, or you're talking about a woman, or you know. And I that's how the song kind of began, with just that line. And then we expanded it to a litany of trouble on New Year's. And then we all end up singing together in the middle of an evening filled with a burnt sofa and a runaway dog and a broken window, and someone got arrested.
Well, let's hear New Year's Eve.
Okay.
Okay, well, this is New Year's Eve from Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me.
It felt like 4 in the morning. What sounded like fireworks turned out to be just what it was. The stars looked like diamonds. And then came the sirens, and everyone started to curse. All the noise was disturbing, and I couldn't find Irving. It was like two stations on at the same time. And then I hid your car keys, and I made black coffee, and I dumped out the rest of the room.
That's New Year's Eve from Tom Waits' new album, Bad As Me. Back in the days when you were living in a hotel or living on the road,
yeah.
Did you ever imagine that one day you would be married for 30 years and the father of three?
No, I didn't. But I do remember disciplining imaginary children in the back seat of my car.
Why?
Hold your horses, Bill. It's enough out of you. I don't know why. Maybe I was anticipating their arrival, and I was rehearsing. I don't know, but I couldn't have seen that one coming. I don't know how much of our lives we can actually see coming.
I was such a big fan of The Wire. I have to.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It used your song down, way down in the
down
hole,
the hole, yeah.
As the theme, and there were like you know different versions of it. You had a version, Steve Earle, the Blind Boys of Alabama,
bunch of people,
and then this group of Baltimore teenagers, DiMaggi.
Yeah.
So can you tell the story behind writing the song? It's a song about keeping the devil down in the hole.
Down the hole, yeah. I don't know what the origin of the song came, but it was very fast. And he needed a gospel song for this collection of tunes that we'd written for Frank's Wild Years for a show, you know, that eventually was done by Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago and then became a record. I don't know. We had background vocalists on it, which I dug. But the song happened fast. It was like, I was probably thinking about Ray Charles trying to find one of those grooves that he lives in. And once I had the groove, then everything else just kind of fell together, you know.
So I want to play two versions back to back of Way Down in the Hole. Your version.
Oh, okay.
And then also the version that was used for season 4 of The Wire, okay. Which is the season set in part in a junior high. So when these this group from Baltimore, and like I say, all I know about them is that it's a group of teenagers from Baltimore. I don't know whether they assembled just for this recording or whether they're a pre-existing group. But did you work with them at all on this?
No, I didn't. No, I they kept the song as a theme, and they kept offering it to different groups to rearrange for their own purposes, and I didn't have TV, so I didn't really experience The Wire until it was over, and I got tapes of it, and I became a huge fan of the show and all of the people involved after it was over, and I was really flattered to be a part of it, frankly.
Oh, it's such a it works so great as a theme. So let's hear your version and the DiMaggi, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, version back to back.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole.
He's got fire and the fury at his command. To worry, hold on to Jesus, and we'll be saved from Satan when the thunder rolls. But you gotta keep the devil down in the hole.
Keep doing the good, all right? I saw you.
Oh, yeah.
That's Tom Waits' version of his song, Way Down in the Hole, and then the version that was used in season 4 of The Wire. And that theme was used throughout The Wire, and it worked perfectly, I have to say.
Oh, cool.
So I just want to quote something that you told The Guardian, the British newspaper, a few years ago in 2006. And you said when you stopped drinking, you wondered, am I genuinely eccentric or am I just wearing a funny hat? What am I made of? What's left when you drain the pool? So I think it was like years ago, many years ago, that you gave up drinking. What did you learn about yourself when the alcohol wasn't there anymore?
I didn't know what to do with my hands.
Oh, like when you stopped smoking?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was smoking one hand and drinking the other. What did I learn? Boy, that's a big question, Terry.
If it's too big, don't feel like you need to answer it.
I think it's probably like the what my wife said about the reality distortion field that I live in, which is kind of a place that you don't necessarily come back from. You know, maybe drugs and alcohol are more of a vacation from reality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They say that life itself is really just the dead on vacation, yeah.
Oh, God, I hadn't heard that.
Isn't that terrible? I don't know. Am I just wearing a funny hat? Am I just trying to say weird stuff? Or am I really peculiar and genuinely?
Did you want to be peculiar?
Well, I've always wanted to be curious and provocative, I guess, and interesting and interested in this kind of sparkling sapphire we all call home. You know? I've always wanted to be mystified by it all and rather fascinated with life itself. And I don't know, I think maybe when you drink you're probably robbing yourself of that genuine experience, even though it appears that you're doing is getting more of it. You're getting less of it. And it takes a while when you've had a rock on the hose like that for so long, it takes a while for the hose to be a hose again, you know, and for things to start flowing. Like with songs, if you don't play for a while, if you stop playing for even a year, sometimes it all builds up in a really great way. That there's no such thing as not playing. You know, there's just, you know, music has rests in it. So you're on a rest right now. And the music will begin shortly. You know, it's like an orchestra tuning up. I used to try and get myself started. I would take a tape recorder and I would put it in the trash can and the ones that are on wheels, you know, and I'd turn it on and then I'd roll around in the yard with it and then play it back and see if I could hear any interesting rhythms, you know, that were just part of nature, you know. I tell you, the best snare drum on earth is a trampoline in like November when all the branches have landed and they're heavy and they're wet. And when you jump on the trampoline, they all lift up and come down at the same time. It's like, wow.
Have you used those sounds on recordings?
I haven't, but I intend to.
It was so great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Good talking with you too, Terry.
Tom Waits recorded in 2011. It's the 20th anniversary of his two albums, Blood Money and Alice, which are being reissued on vinyl with new live versions of some songs.